sinner. I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. So we have two classes of people. Now, even Paul in Philippians said, I have more right to glory in the flesh than anyone else because I am, and let's just look at the verse there. It's right toward the middle there at the bottom. It says Philippians 3:4. He might have confidence in the flesh, I more so. Well, circumcised the eighth day, of the stock of Israel, of the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of Hebrews, concerning the law, a what? The Pharisees were considered to be the greatest by the Jewish people. And Paul stands on that. He says, "You, these Judaizing teachers that are coming in there and they're telling you how much the law means to them and how important they are because of the law, I want you to know I have more than they do because I was a Pharisee and I was a Hebrew of Hebrews." So the Pharisees were seen as the highest echelon of the Jewish nation. What about the tax collectors? See, they're at the very bottom. They were despised. And Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? For do not even the tax collectors the same. Now, is he talking about those tax collectors in a good way? No. That's the bottom. The next one. If he refuses to hear the church, let him be to you like a heathen and a tax collector. So the tax collector, so when Jesus picks these two people, it's very interesting that he picks the highest and the lowest, and yet, in the end, the lowest is forgiven and justified, and the highest goes away still a sinner. I don't know how interested you are in it. I went ahead and pulled this up. I knew most of this, but I went ahead and got it out of an encyclopedia this afternoon, a Bible encyclopedia. And the publicans, it was a very interesting way that they went about it. I'm sure you've heard the story before. I'll just give you a quick summary. The Roman Senate would open up bidding for each province, each of these areas like Pamphylia and Judea and Cappadocia and Asia. And these people called publicani, or cani, I don't know how you pronounce it, but they would bid on it. And so they would say, if you give me Judea, I will give you this amount of money. And the Senate would say, okay, that'll work. So they go to Judea, and once they've got that money paid up, now what? Everything else is theirs, right? So they go to Judea, and they start coming up with ways to get more and more and more money. And then everybody below them, they tell this guy like Zacchaeus, who's the chief tax collector, they tell him, here's how much money a month you need to give us, and anything above that, you get to keep. And then the people below him were told that you need to give me this much money, and once you've got that, then you can keep it. So the more cruel you were, and the more selfish you were, and the more you exacted more taxes than you should, the more money you got. Now, how's that system going to play out? Even Cicero, he had some things to say about it. I put that in there just so you could let's see, where is it? Be on page 3. Oh, where did I see that? Yeah, okay, you're right. It was the basest of all livelihoods, the wolves and bears of human society, the frightful abuses practiced in conquered provinces by the governors who were sent to rule them. They're well known to all. It's just a terrible thing. And I just want to read the second. Okay, yeah, the third to the bottom. All this was enough to bring the class into ill favor everywhere. So everybody hated tax collectors. In Judea and Galilee, there were special circumstances. The strong feeling of many Jews that it was unlawful to pay tribute. And so the publicans were hated as the instruments by which the subjection of the Jews to the Roman Empire was perpetuated. So they not only saw them as thieves and corrupt, but they saw them as traitors and betrayers. So they were at the bottom. And the misery that these people, look at this last line, among the beasts of the city were the publican and the parasite. So That's how they were down with the parasites, the fleas and the ticks and the things like that. So Jesus knew how strongly the Jews felt about publicans or tax collectors, and Jesus knew how highly people looked at the Pharisees. So he chooses the two extremes in order to help us understand exactly what he's trying to get across here. Jesus strips them, though. Let's look at these three verses toward the top of page, or the middle of page 3. Let's see. Charles, you want to read that first one, Matthew 23:24?
Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees and hypocrites, for you pay tithes of mint, anise, and cumin, and have neglected weightier matters of the law, justice and mercy and faith. These you ought to have done without leaving the others undone. Blind guides who strain at a net and swallow a camel.
So the Lord doesn't see as man sees. Remember 1 Samuel, when Samuel saw the first son of Jesse? He said, this is the one. And what did God say to him? Yeah, man looks at the outward appearance, and the Lord looks at the heart. So the outward appearance of the Pharisees was stellar. They were tithing the smallest things, and everybody's looking at them. Wow, look at the righteous. They even tithe these tiny little things. They count out these little bitty seeds. That's how righteous they are. What does Jesus say? You were doing the little things, but you weren't doing the big things. Now, he gets a little more pointed in chapter 23, verses 25 and 26. Let's see. George, you want to read that one for us?
Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you cleanse the outside of the cup and dish, but inside they are full of extortion and self-indulgence. Blind Pharisee, first cleanse the inside of the cup and dish, that the outside of them may be clean also.
Okay, so the Pharisees are very concerned that the outside of the car is clean as it can be. Everybody, what everybody sees, the dish, the outside of the dish, the outside of the cup, but what's on the inside? They wash it. Would you want to drink a cup that's just sparkling on the outside, but you can see a ring in the bottom of the cup? Is that the kind of cup we want to drink out of? But that's the kind of people these people were. So then he gives us an even stronger one. Virgil, you want to read that one for us?
Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you are like whitewashed tombs, which indeed appear beautiful outwardly, but inside are full of dead men's bones and all uncleanliness. Even so, you also outwardly appear righteous to men, but inside you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness.
Okay, so the Jews held them up here. Where does God see them? See, for God, they're at the bottom, aren't they? I mean, it's a lot worse to be a harlot or a tax collector, or is it a lot worse to be a Pharisee who acts like the tax collector on the inside and condemns the tax collector, who may be a lot better on the inside as far as struggling is concerned? They're just in a bad situation. They've let themselves get into a bad situation. Oftentimes, it's the drug addicts and the prostitutes who are more open to the gospel than the wealthy and the self-satisfied and the self-righteous people who think they already are there. So Jesus wants it clearly understood that these Pharisees are not what they appear. Now, I'm just giving this globally because now we're going to get into the specifics here. So here's the Pharisee toward the bottom of page, or the bottom of the middle. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself. God, I thank you that I am not like other men. Now, let's stop right there. Is that thanksgiving to God? Or is that thanksgiving to himself? See, you look at what he says. I'm thankful that I'm not like other men. Well, why is he not like other men?
Because he thinks of himself as higher than other men.
Okay, because I fast and I do this and I do that and I'm so thankful that I do all these things. Where's God? Where's the thanksgiving here? See, there isn't any. There really isn't any. And sadly, as Jesus told them, he said, if God were your father, you would love me because I came from God. And Abraham saw me and rejoiced to see my day. So you are of your father, John 8:44, the devil. And it's his will you want to do. So the Pharisees were so thankful for what they were. And what's God up in heaven thinking? How could you say that? How could you say that? And that's why when Jesus ends the parable, those who exalt themselves are going to be humbled. And those who humble themselves are going to be exalted. So, and again, I think what's important here is that we put ourselves and try to put ourselves, whose shoes do we fit into better? Are we more like the Pharisee? Because we've been members of the church all these years and we have all of these things and we really are a little bit better than everyone else. Or are we more like the publican, recognizing that I'm a sinner and it's only because Christ died for me and it's only because of the scriptures and the Holy Spirit who has guided me that I've been able to put all of these outside things, but what's still going on the inside? So you get rid of the big stuff. But like I said, then here comes, to him who knows to do good and doesn't do it, it's sin. Now where are we? How many times at the end of the day do you realize, I wish I should have said this, I should have done this, I shouldn't have done this. And are we really that much better than we were? See, as you start peeling back the onion and you start getting into it deeper and deeper, even the smallest things in the center of that onion are going to burn the eyes. And so, like Paul, here's Paul about to be put to death. He's writing 1 Timothy, and then he's going to write 2 Timothy. He still says, I'm the what? I'm the chief of sinners. Does he say I was? No, he says I am. I am the chief of sinners. So if Paul felt that way, and then, of course, in Philippians, he says that just a little bit earlier. Not that I've already attained or already made perfect, but one thing I do, forgetting what lies behind and stretching forward to what lies ahead, I'm pressing on. So in every moment of Paul's life, he's not where he wants to be. He's not where he should be. He is not happy where he is. He is humble. He is a sinner who is repenting of his sins. And this is the true mark of a Christian. And that's what this parable is really hitting the heart of. And I think it's really important that we try to figure out whether we're more like Paul and more like this publican or this tax collector, or whether we are more like this Pharisee. And because, I've met members of the Church of Christ and preachers in the Church of Christ who think that because of all that they've done, they're really special. They're very important. Are they? They're no different. There's no difference except, as Paul said, he said, don't think of yourself more highly than you ought to think, but think soberly, because every gift you have, where'd it come from? All the gifts are grace. So if you're a better public speaker, or you have more knowledge of the scripture, or you have more self-control because that's a gift God gave to you, does that make you better than the guy who doesn't have that? See, not at all. And in the body, there are different gifts and abilities. So is the hand going to be judged like the foot? Is the foot going to be judged like the eye? Is the eye going to be judged like the ear? Everyone is going to be judged differently based on their abilities. And that's why we have to be so afraid. I skipped over a verse earlier that said, those who compare themselves with themselves are not wise. Virgil?
And in my mind, one of the easiest ways to see this, of course, is see it with other people, difficult to see it ourselves,
right,
is a competitive nature. And if we are competitive to the extent that we have built ourselves up to something that we're not, then we fit that category. And we need to take a step back and stop and take a serious look at what is going on in my life. Now, let me talk about myself. See, make sure what is going on in my life. And now comes the hard part, how to make adjustments along the way so that we don't either in reality or falsely leave the impression that we think we are better. We can't do that.
Right.
We have to take a step back and understand that we are not one iota better. We have all the problems that everybody else does. We may have been able to take and master some of the fallacies that has been in our life, but we're still, like the Apostle Paul, we're the chief of sinners.
Yep.
Period.
Exactly. And there has to be that humility, because everyone who exalts himself will be humble. But those who humble themselves. And so we need to be looking for those things. You know, the illustration I've given for years, and I think it's so important, is if you drop a glass jar or glass in the middle of your kitchen floor that's tile, and you pick up the big pieces, are you done? You going to walk in that room barefoot?
No.
No, you get the broom out, and you sweep it up. Are you done? No, now it's even more dangerous, because what's there now?
Sure.
These tiny little slivers that you can't see in your foot. So you get the vacuum cleaner. And I'm still not done. I'm going to get the mop, and I'm going to mop it, and I'm going to make sure there's not a single piece there, because if there's one there, ultimately what's going to happen?
Somebody's
going to
step on it.
Yeah, and it might be me. I mean, if it's Jeannie, that's okay, right? No, it's actually the other way around. You know, I don't want either one of us to step. But the point is that's what sin, that's exactly what sin is. You get rid of the big pieces first. Are you safe? No. Then you start looking for the smaller pieces, and you get rid of them. And I think usually in the first 10 to 20 years of our Christian walk, we get rid of most of the big stuff. But then, as I said, we don't stop. Some people stop there and they start feeling self-righteous. I've conquered all of these things. But then we get into this little stuff like he's dealing with here, where the very thing, the very fact that you're saying I've conquered all these things, now where are you? See, now you're back in sin, just like this Pharisee. So the problem is that God has saved us through the blood of Christ and asked us to become perfect. You shall be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. Now, how many of us have reached that perfection yet?
Yeah.
See, every time I start reading the scriptures, your daily Bible reading, is it kind of humbling sometimes? I mean, does it open your eyes to, oh man, I haven't gotten as far as I thought I have. And that's a good thing, especially when you're reading the Sermon on the Mount, you're reading through the parables of Jesus. And that's what's important about this one, because nobody is immune to thinking, we're a better church than such and such, or we are better people than this group of people or that group of people. And suddenly, and maybe we are, but what difference does that make? See, when I go before God on the judgment day, is it even going to matter what church I was a member of? Is that where I'm going to get my... Oh, you were a member of the Holly Street. Oh, okay, well, you're going to get better. Is that going to happen? Is that not going to happen? You're going there alone. Doesn't matter who you were married to. Doesn't matter who your children are. Doesn't matter who your parents are. Doesn't matter what church you went to. What matters is, here's the gospel. You were a steward. Here was the stewardship that was given. Here's the gifts I gave you at birth. Here's the gifts that I gave you as you went along. And here's what you did with them. And what else is going to matter? And that's humbling. That's humbling. Because God wants us to understand. Humbling is the most important thing. So this Pharisee, he is not like other men. How many people are like other men? Is there anybody who's like other men? No, nobody is. I mean, even if I'm a homosexual, am I like other men? No. Nobody is the same. So this statement it's redundant. It doesn't mean anything. Yeah, you're not an extortioner. Well, actually, did Jesus call them extortioners? Your heart is full of extortion. In Matthew 23, right above there, he says, your inside is full of extortion. and you're neglecting the weightier. You don't have justice or mercy or faith. And you're like whitewashed tombs inside full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. So I'm not like other men. Yeah, you're worse than other men. And that's, and I'm laughing here because it's just so, it's, what's the word I want? There's such a hypocrisy here. There's such a it's upside down. What do we call that? A conundrum. Things are just completely upside down. Go ahead, Rob.
Well, it's along with what Virgil said. It's, if we're doing a self-examination daily, we probably have the tendency of comparing ourselves to others around us. And of course, that's what the Pharisee was doing. But, I mean, we should compare ourselves to Jesus Christ. And then we're going to have to continue striving to ever, we'll never reach it. But that's the goal.
Yeah, that's the goal. And every time we fail to reach it, it's time to smite the breast. It's time to not look up into heaven. I really get nervous when I find people who are asking for forgiveness of sins, who are just really mouthing words. There's really no true godly sorrow. There's really no true realization. I just hurt God. I just showed God that I wasn't as appreciative and thankful to Him for what He's done, that I was not the kind of person that I ought to be. And does it matter what the sin was, that we shouldn't go through that terrible process of I'm sorry and godly sorrow? And this man didn't have any of that. I mean, he wasn't even looking for his own sins. They were there. But by comparing himself to this tax collector, he looks pretty good. Go ahead, David.
Do you think also we at times have this Pharisee type of attitude, even when we're talking with non-Christians, and that sometimes turn them off versus showing the love of Christ, who bring more or less a Pharisee to the world that knows that, to have their life changed?
Right. Yeah, I'm, over the years, I've come to understand that I think that the strongest members in the Lord's church have the most temptation to be like the Pharisees, because they're not in the denominations. They have risen above so much error, and they have grown so far in their knowledge of the Scriptures and in their own personal consecration that they can start thinking like the Pharisees. I mean, it's really easy to do that. We look down at the Catholics, we look at all the different denominations and all the terrible things that they're teaching, and I'm so thankful that I'm not like them. Instead of, I'm so thankful that God kept me from going to them, and I want to help them out of that situation. So yeah, I think that of all the people, and I won't say that people in denominations don't have the same temptation, because I'm sure they do, because their criteria is so much lower. But once you reach a pinnacle where you really do know the Scriptures, is it tempting to, from up, way up here, man, look at all those people down there. And they are down there. I mean, we did reach a pinnacle. Didn't that what Paul said? We are pressing on to the upward call of God. And there are some members of the church who have really climbed high. But what does that mean? See, it only means by the grace of God and by the opportunities that were given to me and by the gifts that were given to me. I mean, let's face this. If we'd been born in the Middle Ages without all the tools that we have today, could we be what we are? See, we're standing on the backs of a lot of hard work that's been done throughout the last 5 or 6 centuries. We got a concordance that somebody must have taken half their life. They didn't even have a computer, and they made that concordance. They took all those words, and now we can look at that, and we can find verses. And they've done that with all these different commentaries. And I realize there's problems with commentaries, but they're a blessing sometimes, because sometimes somebody has an insight into something you had never figured out. So, yeah, we reached this point. I better get going here. We're spending so much time on him. But the fasting was also considered to be a very special thing. I remember the the Pharisees came to him. Why do your disciples, why do the disciples of John fast, and why do those of the Pharisees, but yours don't fast? So you're not as good as the Pharisees and the disciples of John. All right, let's go ahead and turn to the last page. Let's talk a little bit about the tax collector. The beauty of the tax collector, like a harlot, is there any doubt whether they're a sinner or not? See, the Pharisee could doubt if he was a sinner. How about the publican or the tax collector or the harlot? Can they have any doubt they're a sinner? See, it'd be pretty tough. I mean, you'd have to be pretty hard-hearted to say this is a good occupation. And there are some today who will do that. But the tax collector had no doubt. The entire Jewish nation said he was a sinner. And the entire Roman world said that he was a parasite and he was a blight to the lives of other people. And the way they made their money and the things that they did, there was no doubt. And so he knew the cheating that he'd done. He knew the kind of person that he was. He was acutely aware. He was a sinner. And so we see it in his sense of reverence and awe. He stands afar off. He won't raise his eyes up to heaven. Is that humility? I don't deserve. Remember what Jesus said? If you go to a feast, you take the lowest seat there so that maybe somebody will have you come up. Maybe they won't. But if you go to the upper seat, what's somebody liable to do? Hey, you don't belong there. You go down here. You've got to go down, way down. And it's embarrassing. Well, this man knows I'm at the bottom. And I don't deserve to be up at the front. And I don't deserve to look God in the eye. I don't even deserve to ask him for mercy. Ever feel like that sometimes, Father? I don't even deserve your mercy. I don't even deserve your love. I'm so ashamed of what I've done. And of course, that's humility. And it may not even be true. I guess we all deserve his love. But when you're in the depths of anguish over committing or doing something you shouldn't have done, you think things like that. Just like this man here. Be merciful to me, a sinner. That's all he could say. He didn't have anything else. He has godly sorrow. He's humble. The outside exterior in the eyes of men is despicable, whereas the Pharisees' outside exterior was beautiful. But if you looked on the inside, Jesus says, this publican has a better heart than this Pharisee. Now, if you look at, I'm not going to read it because we just don't have the time. But in Ezra 9 there, I capitalized how many times he says we and our. Because he understood, I can't rise above this nation and I have my own weaknesses that have added to this situation. So there was no justification for the Pharisee. He went home a sinner. He went home lost. He went home doomed to destruction because of that kind of a prayer. The Pharisee, the publican, went home justified. Now here's the question. When he got home, what did he do? Did he go back to tax collecting or did he give it up? If he went back to tax collecting, how long did he stay justified? Till the first time he sinned again. So we're not exactly sure, and Jesus isn't very interested in that. That's going to come later. He just wants to hit us hard with, are you truly repenting? Do you see yourself clearly? Are you humble? And then he draws his conclusion at the very bottom there, everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. And so I just want to read that last verse here in 1 Peter 5. It says, yes, all of you be submissive one to another and be clothed with humility, for God resists the proud but gives grace to the humble. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God that he may exalt you in due time. And now we've learned how to humble ourselves. We need to see ourselves like the publican. We can't see ourselves like the Pharisee. And it's so easy to do that. As I say, most Christians, they climb really high compared to where they were, but that doesn't make them any higher in the eyes of God than when they started. Because every sin puts you right back there again. All right, any questions or thoughts on this? Charles?
Comes to my mind also to whatever gets like that. When you ask for forgiveness, and we know that the Lord, you know, will forgive us for those things, and we continue in that, you know, I mean, we're aware of it, but for some reason, you know, we keep repeating it over and over and over. Maybe we have a situation where I think this is best for me, and we keep on doing the same thing over and over. That doesn't make any sense either, I don't think.
Well,
once we come into the knowledge of the truth,
the spirit is willing and the flesh is weak. And there are some sins that take a lifetime to completely eradicate, and some you're just not going to eradicate it. And so, what did Jesus say? Not seven times, but 70 times seven. And he wasn't saying that to say, okay, when you get to the 490th time, we're done. He's saying it's limitless. And so if I go to God today and tomorrow and the next day, genuinely repenting and then in weakness doing it again, I don't see that as hypocrisy. You see what I'm saying? If the person is truly penitent, then yeah, over time you would hope, but who's going to decide that? Isn't God going to be the one to decide? I mean, what are we going to say? Okay, this is the 491st time. Get out of here. Robbie had a comment.
Well, do you think he could have went back to being an honest tax collector?
Well, Zacchaeus.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to think. Who else? Yeah.
Yeah, Zacchaeus said, "I restore fourfold." I'm sorry, George, I didn't hear you. Oh, you did? Somebody did. Oh, what did you say, David?
Same as you. You said it.
Oh, okay. David's a ventriloquist, George, because I thought that was coming out of your mouth. All right, well, we better stop there. It's only 2 minutes until we're supposed to start singing, so...